Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 8th day of August, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call, and as I'm pretty much getting used to of late, your host struggled this week with just how do we begin to wrap up a week like this one. But this may be a reasonable way to begin. Stupid is as stupid does has become an epidemic. It certainly spread a lot faster than COVID-1984 and arguably killed far more people. But it does look like we're heading into the second wave of that one, too. And if you've watched the video of the massive bomb blast in Beirut, Lebanon, you may have a clue about what I'm referring to. But most of the idiots out there, especially the press, don't seem to. To his credit, the president, after meeting with top military commanders, said the evening of the blast, quote, they seemed to think it was an attack. It was a bomb of some kind. That might be because it pretty obviously was. When questioned, he emphasized, quote, it was a bomb of some kind, yes. And the dumbed-down press says, without providing any evidence, President Trump claims the explosion in Beirut is the result of an attack. How dare he contradict the official statement of the Lebanese prime minister? Now, if you haven't seen the full versions of the video, folks, and there are a whole lot of them, because it started with a massive plume of smoke that got a whole lot of people pulling out their cell phones and videotaping the rest, including the real blast and the incredible shockwave, some of them as their houses or cars were subsequently destroyed, and for a few, it may have been the last thing they ever did. In any case, there was a 2-minute compilation video put together, courtesy of a man named Heshmat Alavi, who tweeted it out. It's quite striking. I did see the links courtesy of places like the Gateway Pundit. And if you're even inclined to believe the BS that it was 2,700 tons of ammonium nitrate, yes, acting alone, I'd encourage you to take a look at it. Although I'll guarantee you that if there was a whole bunch of ammonium nitrate stored improperly on that pier, it was vaporized along with a whole lot of buildings and a good portion of the entire city of Beirut. The trouble is, folks, a lot of what we're hearing, like we're getting used to, just doesn't pass the smell test. And while I've never been around an ammonium nitrate explosion, like, say, used to remove a stump on a farm, I've been told it's pretty distinctive and hard to miss. And farmers that use it know not to go immediately into the crater. Gotta let the gas dissipate for a couple of minutes first. And here's where things get interesting. Well, unless you get your news from CNN or NPR. Expert estimates of the magnitude of the blast, which registered as between a 3.3 and some estimates say 4.3 magnitude earthquake, put the size of the blast at between 0.3 kilotons on the low end to as much as 2 kilotons on the high end, with an average somewhere in the 1 kiloton range, which is around 1/15 of the size of the first nuclear bomb dropped on Hiroshima at 15 kilotons, and more powerful than a lot of U.S. tactical nukes. And note, by the way, that those took the Manhattan Project and later billions of taxpayer dollars to develop as well. And by the way, while I wouldn't trust them necessarily to report on it, it does look like there are no radioactive byproducts in this particular explosion. So you can probably rule the nukes out. What's also interesting, and I got this information from a piece at the Business Insider, that even the low-end estimates put the explosive yield of the Beirut bomb at least as great as the United States' biggest non-nuclear weapon, called the B-61 gravity bomb, or known colloquially as the MOAB, the mother of all bombs. Believed to have an explosive yield of something like 0.3 kiloton. Another comparison that your host happened to think of was, what if a fully loaded Saturn V rocket, all three stages, the most powerful heavy lift booster ever developed by mankind, was to have exploded on the launch pad? Experts say that if you add up all three stages, that theoretically the explosion could reach 0.543 kilotons. But that's unlikely, they say, because even with fuel and oxidizer all right there together, the explosion would probably have dissipated some of the fuel and oxidizer before it could all properly combust. In other words, it really is tough to get an explosion that big. Still, though, a small fraction of what was used in Beirut. And yet we're supposed to believe all of this happened by accident because a bunch of idiots don't know how to store fertilizer? I will give them this, though. If I really wanted to blow up something big and kill a lot of people and maybe set off a war, I'd pick a place where a whole bunch of stuff was stored that I could blame it on and maybe even see the colored smoke from after the attack. Now, you may be thinking, why would the media lie about something like this? Well, there's always the reason that Edmund Hillary climbed Everest, because it's there. Arguably, one good reason for lying is that they're too stupid, paid off, and lazy to actually do some legwork and search out the truth. And it may just be something as simple and petty as the fact that the president called it a bomb, so they're going to say anything else but. because they hate him and everybody that listens to him. I'll suggest again that what we're hearing just isn't the truth. Why? Is another matter, but I have no doubt that over the next few months, like it or not, we're almost certain to find out. That is, if we learn to look back and connect the dots. The criminally negligent networks aren't going to do it for you. By Friday morning, though, we were at least seeing stories like this. What with more than 3,000 families in Beirut now homeless, and at least 150 having been officially declared dead, Lebanese President Michel Aoun said Friday that an official government probe would look into the, quote, possibility of external interference, including maybe that the explosion was triggered by a rocket or bomb. A lot of people are obviously very upset. Many have taken to the streets, and 16 have been arrested. But some fear that those taken into custody are merely scapegoats for, quote, government incompetence. For my part, folks, your host can't help but recall that we had a full Senate investigation after the mass murder of a bunch of people in their church in Waco. Come to think of it, they did the same thing after JFK's killing. Oh, and let's not forget 9/11, TWA Flight 800, and the Oklahoma City bombing. And somehow they all tend to support the official Big Brother narrative. Isn't that amazing? But it's not just whoppers that are being promulgated. It's also censorship, of course. While we're getting used to this, two Facebook and Twitter have crossed yet another line. On Wednesday, Zuckerberg's company, still vying for the title of the world's most evil socialist network, removed a post from the president's page for including what they called false and misleading information, which means you know it hit too close to the truth, about, yeah, COVID-1984. And this marks the first time Twitter has actually crossed the line of removing content posted by the president or his campaign. That was followed up by Twitter doing the same thing for basically the same bogus reason. And what was it that the president dared to say that so violated the sensibilities of those who see themselves as the guardians of truth, justice, and the Soviet way, their oh-so-selectively enforced so-called rules? Trump's tweet included a video clip from a Fox News interview in which the president said that children are, quote, almost immune from COVID-19, and that, Achtung, violates the site's rules against misinformation. Unless, of course, you're touting the Soviet Socialist Communist Fascist Party line, in which case they will push it to the sky. But, as it turns out, and the Gateway Pundit tells us, there have been 86 children in the U.S. who have died where the death was linked. And you know what that means? Not really all that much, because they almost certainly died of other causes. To COVID-1984. And here they quote another guy looking to be banned from Twitter, MD Dr. James Todaro, who said the number of children in the USA who have allegedly died from novel coronavirus, 86. Compare that to the number of children in the USA who die each and every year from the seasonal flu, 500. And about 700 children drown each and every year, while over 1,200 of them are killed in roadside fatalities. And your host will add this. According to none other than the CDC, the number of children who died in 2017 from sudden unexpected infant deaths was about 3,600. 1,400 of those were called SIDS, or sudden infant death syndrome, another 1,300 due to unknown causes, and some 900 of them. In other words, over 10 times those that died, allegedly anyway, with COVID-19 due to accidental suffocation and strangulation in their beds. And if even a small fraction of those infants died as a result of complications from the mandated vaccination schedules, I guarantee you one thing, you're not about to hear that from any of these so-called news sources either. But it's probably far more than died with COVID-19 as well. So those gatekeepers punished the president and deleted that post of his that so offended them for even getting close to this whole great big field of stinking whoppers. And this is kind of interesting, maybe even surprising. Now we know, says the Gateway Pundit, the name of the first Twitter official to announce the suspension of the Trump campaign account. His name is Nick Passillo. He's admitted it on Twitter. Oh, and guess what? He just happens to be the former Kamala Harris press secretary. You know, the woman who some suggest, and that would include your host, because she's not only so evil, but a major Soros puppet, the deep state and their communist comrades want to put in the White House once the senile one is done drooling on the Constitution. And since we're talking about the senile one, I guess these next couple of stories fit here too. Joe Biden was asked by a black man and reporter from CBS News, Errol Barnett, if he'd taken a cognitive test during an interview on Wednesday morning. And senile creepy quid pro Joe lost it. Writes Jim Hoff for the Gateway Pundit, the longtime politician who seems to be having a rough time with black voters recently, asked the person of color reporter if he was a junkie. Here's the clip via the Trump War Room.
Have you taken a cognitive
test? No, I haven't taken a test. Why the hell would I take a test?
Why indeed, folks? The answer's obvious.
Why the hell would I take a test? Come on, man. That's like saying you, before you got in this program, if you take a test where you're taking cocaine or not, what do you think, huh? Are you a junkie?
What do you...
Now wait just a doggone minute. This is the same slime bag who not only wants to force you to take a test and wear a mask, but probably take a vaccine, too. Who's he kidding? Well, who's he lying to?
Are you a junkie?
What do you say to President Trump, who brags about his test and makes your mental state an issue for voters?
Well, if he can't figure out the difference between an elephant and a lion, I don't know what the hell he's talking about.
Huh? Just which one is he claiming to be?
Did you watch that? Look, come on, man. I know you're trying to goad me, but, I mean, I'm so forward-looking to have an opportunity to sit with the president or stand with the president in debates. There's going to be plenty of time. And by the way, as I joke with him, you know, I shouldn't say it. I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say.
Oh, really? What else is new? Don't let that stop you, Joe. He shouldn't be sniffing little girls and fondling other people's wives either, but he didn't let propriety stop him there now, did he? And none of them want to talk about quid pro quos and bribery.
I shouldn't say it. I'm going to say something I probably shouldn't say. Anyway, I am very willing to let the American public judge my physical and mental my physical as well as my mental
Easy for you to say.
Go, you know the thing.
But the senile one seems to have been on a roll lately. This too comes from the Gateway Pundit via Cassandra Fairbanks, where a creepy quid pro Joe tells us that all black people basically think the same, with some notable exceptions.
What you all know, but most people don't know, unlike the African-American community with notable exceptions, the Latino community is an incredibly diverse community with incredibly different attitudes about different things.
So here's Joe Biden saying all of those people basically think alike, with notable exceptions. So isn't it funny that nobody from the press or the far left, but I repeat myself, has called this bigoted racist out for being a, well, bigoted racist? Certainly far more than a whole lot of university professors that have lost their jobs for a whole lot less. I bet he could even get away with using the N-word in one of those interviews. They'd just chalk it up to his increasingly obvious senility. But wait a minute, then they'd have to admit his increasingly obvious senility. Which brings me to the real point of this entire sequence. The whole idea of George Orwell's doublethink, you know, war is peace, weakness is strength, is dumbing people down to the point where Big Brother can get away with precisely that. Which brings us logically to what follows next, the stupid segment. Or maybe it's the stupid and evil segment, because it's getting kind of hard to tell the difference in so much of America with a K. Portland rioters, says another piece from the same source, learned a valuable lesson about how motorcycles can't stop trucks when they attacked a motorist on Tuesday evening. Rioters late in the evening were attempting to block off a street, what else, when a man driving a truck pulled up and attempted to navigate his way through. But instead of letting him pass, they attacked him and his vehicle, slashing his tires, breaking out his window, and then throwing a motorcycle in front of it in an attempt to block the truck in. Instead, the man dragged the motorcycle for 12 blocks before stopping and confronting the militant leftist mob who were chasing him with his gun in hand. No, kids, don't try this at home, and don't even think about it without having gun in hand. And here's the quote, and I'm going to have to read this one because I can't hardly play the video for you folks for reasons that'll be obvious. I don't want to spend all day bleeping it. Quote, I don't want to run nobody over. Y'all started throwing s at my MFing truck. Y'all are stupid, man. Effing dumb, you idiot protesters. You think you're doing good, but you're doing bad. I love black people. The S you're doing up here, it's stupid. You started piling S on my MFing truck for no reason, the man shouted at the rioters, according to the Nationalist Review. But wait, we're not done yet. The Nationalist Review then points out that immediately after the incident, the militant, communist Black Lives Matter and Antifa rioters and their sympathizers in the far-left press tried to spin the event as if they somehow were the real victims. Listen to this, courtesy of something called Portland Independent News. Video I shot tonight as a pickup truck attempted to drive into protesters. Had it not been for the motorcycle putting itself in the way of this truck, things could have been much worse.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid as stupid does, Mr. Blue.
I guess.
Here's one, kind of obvious but still worth noting, courtesy of Shane Trejo at Big League Politics, about how so-called medical experts, aided by the propagandists and the fake news media, are shaming families for gathering together. How dare you spread COVID? Yes, that's where the surge is coming from, while giving a pass to all the race riders and leftists that are burning down cities in the name of, well, you know, Black Lives Matter or the new Bolshevik Revolution. It is foolish, said San Bernardino County officials, to endanger the lives of those you love most, they said, trying to scare citizens into putting on their masks and being good little slaves. And the piece quotes a letter signed by over 1,000 so-called medical professionals, probably in fear of losing their license, who made it clear they support widespread protests during the COVID-19 84 pandemic, in spite of the fact that everything they said for weeks prior to that was absolutely contrary to that, demonstrating the agenda is nothing but political. And I like the way Shane puts it. Here's the quote from the article, which he said is so Orwellian it might make your head explode. Quote, staying at home, socialist distancing, and public masking are effective at minimizing the spread of COVID-19.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
To the extent possible, we support the application of these public health best practices during demonstrations that call attention to the pervasive lethal force of white supremacy, unquote. BLM terror riots, in other words, are permissible because of the socialist agenda behind them, but peaceful protests against the insane tyrannical measures being brought out against the populace are unacceptable because we don't care about people who are deprived of their livelihoods due to what we're doing to them. And sometimes, folks, they're stupid and they're just plain gullible, courtesy of Christina Layla, a queer indigenous professor at Arizona State University who died of the coronavirus, booga, 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 turns out not to have actually existed at all. For several months, it says, a very popular Twitter account, and notice this one didn't get banned, belonging to, allegedly anyway, a queer indigenous Arizona State University professor operating under the handle at @sciencing_by, duped people in so-called science circles, or what now passes for it, for a number of months. Yes, it says, for several months, Sciencing By tweeted about their battle with coronavirus and whined about being forced to teach in person at Arizona State back in April. Trouble is, nobody saw this alleged person. Nevertheless, on Friday, the professor's death was announced on Twitter by Beth Ann McLaughlin, founder of MeTooSTEM, and a lot of the tweets have since been deleted. No, not because they violated community standards, folks, but because they revealed the big lie. McLaughlin, though, was belatedly banned by Twitter for violating their rules against manipulation, and maybe just a bit because they were really embarrassed about the implications of that. Wrote the lying McLaughlin on July 31, 2020, sad to report, @sciencing_by, died from COVID this evening. She was a fierce protector of people. She let me take my shoulders away from my ears, knowing that she was meaner and more loving than everyone else. Huh? That sounds like something Joe Biden might try to get away with. No one has ever had my back like that. I don't know what I'm going to do. Please read her timeline. Well, it's too late for that. Now exposed, she's been expunged. She was forced by her university to teach in person until April, wrote the lying McLaughlin. Campus closed and she was in the hospital a week later. Be mad, be very mad, I guess, about COVID, but be more mad that the BIPOC community is most vulnerable and underrepresented on campus. We are killing them, unquote. And I guess that applies even if they don't exist. Some of the deleted threads were captured by the Wayback Machine, and Christina Layla is kind enough to put them in, but does note, it's all a hoax. Here's how Motherboard put it, a popular Twitter account claiming to be run by a queer indigenous ASU professor who allegedly died from COVID-19 was an elaborate catfishing hoax. The alleged BIPOC tweeted extensively about social justice, the professor's indigenous heritage as a member of the Hopi tribe, and their LGBTQ experience in academia, as well as their battle with COVID-19.
Oh, what a pity if it's all a lie. Still, I'm sure that you can rock the cynics if you try.
Said Arizona State University to Motherboard in their statement, unfortunately. Is it really unfortunate, folks? Maybe it's about time crap like this got called out. Unfortunately, though, this appears to be a hoax. We have been looking into it since this weekend, and cannot verify any connection with the university. We've been in touch with several deans and faculty members, and no one can identify the account or who might be behind it. And some of the past commentary this person posted is questionable, such as teaching in April, because ASU went fully remote in March. The person also mentioned salary reductions. We haven't implemented any salary reductions here, and we've also had no one, such as a family member or friend, report a death to anyone at the university.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey, hey, we're gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.
Yeah, but there's no doubt plenty more where that came from. After all, it's mainstream now. Maybe that's why Matthew 24 says, be not deceived, because there's a whole heck of it out there already, and certainly more coming. And with that in mind, I guess it's time for a quick update on a story I did earlier this week. Seems like a lot of folks lately are saying the same thing. Jail Fauci. It's referring to that massive international study that we talked about, showing that countries with early use of the much-censored hydroxychloroquine regimen had a 79% lower mortality rate than those that did idiotic things like banning the use of that drug that's been used for a number of things, but notably malaria, for well over half a century now. Meaning, as Jim Hoff puts it, that doctors Fauci, the CDC, the leftist fake news media, and the various tech giants have been pushing a lie that has deadly consequences, especially if you believe that America has reportedly lost over 150,000 lives. 80% of that means that over 100,000 people may have died needlessly, well, unless you count pushing the vaccine. Now, here's the interesting part. Wait a minute, I can hear some of you thinking. A whole bunch of those folks were very old. They had comorbidities. Almost certainly, a lot of them would have died anyway. But think about it, because the left won't, and the destroyers already did. See, here's another one of those elements of Orwellian doublethink that you're just not supposed to notice. Would telling the truth about an easy, inexpensive, widely available treatment have saved a whole lot of lives? Or would those same people have died anyway from all the other things that they already had? In either case, the only thing we know for sure is that they're lying through their teeth, and that the numbers are almost certainly bogus, exaggerated. But regardless, tragic, any way you slice it. We do certainly have to continue the idea of follow the money, because if you really want to know what's coming down, that's the obvious place to start. So with that in mind, let's go to a couple stories. Where else? Zero Hedge. Future says the first one slide ahead of jobless claims data as the surge in precious metals prices continues. U.S. stock index futures dropped on Thursday alongside European stocks as investors looked forward to the latest weekly jobless claims report to gauge the pace of the alleged rebound in the labor market. Oh yeah, and Big Brother's doing another bailout too. Well, maybe some were disappointed because only a few minutes later, the initial jobless claims report came out and it was above 1 million for the 20th straight week. But there might be good news in there because after two straight weeks of rising, this time it fell from 1.435 million to only 1.19 million new Americans signing up for the jobless roles for the first time. Meaning that over 55 million Americans have now applied for jobless benefits since the pandemic lockdowns, as planned, began. And that's over 330 layoffs for every single alleged COVID death in the nation. And it literally dwarfs anything ever seen before in American history. Remember when millions of Americans lost their jobs at the beginning of this pandemic, but were told not to worry because it was all just temporary and they'd soon be going back to their old jobs? Well, that turned out to be a great big whopping lie. And as you know, one new survey says that almost half of all unemployed workers believe their job loss is likely permanent, especially if they work in places like restaurants, hotels, or airlines. But wait, by Friday, the Bureau of Lying Statistics came out and said that 1.76 million jobs were added last week, kind of at variance with other numbers we've seen up until now, even if, as Zero Hedge notes, almost the entire gain in payrolls was the result of a shrinkage in the number of temporarily unemployed workers. And yeah, it all depends on what the meaning of the word temporary is. And to put it in context, of course, we've still got a long ways to go before we even refill half of the labor gap that happened after the March economic self-destruction.
Color me red, white, and blue. Fellow patriots, America's counting on you. And I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees. There's
land. Take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening, folks. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and let's start this one off by looking at a couple of the other major events of the week. Some of these we'd better call lies revealed, which leaves us almost too many whoppers to pick from. And let's start with this one, because it's been around a while. The UK Daily Mail has obtained body cam footage from the infamous George Floyd, well, whatever it was. And on top of the transcript, this shows a whole bunch of stuff that kind of puts to lie the great big narrative about how all the protesters are out there rioting and looting because they're so upset over the not nearly, it turns out, as portrayed death of a guy who evidently died of a self-inflicted drug overdose. Now, not to say that it wasn't tragic. It's just that, like so many other things, the big lie has been used to obscure the truth and advance the politically correct Bolshevik Revolution, New World Order, call it what you want, agenda. And it's really kind of interesting how the Daily Mail spins the footage. If you look at it, you probably won't come to quite the same conclusions that those who were pushing the narrative for the UK rag did. The headline says, exclusive, police body cam footage shows moment-by-moment arrest of George Floyd for the first time, from the terror on his face when an officer points a gun at his head to sobbing before he's shoved into the squad car and begging to breathe as his life drains away. Trouble is, they leave out a really important part there, folks. He was begging and saying, I can't breathe, long before he was put on the ground or any part of anybody's body was on his neck. The video also shows how, quote, belligerent cops cursed at and manhandled the sobbing suspect, ignoring his pleas for compassion, unquote. And I looked at the video, folks, and I would say that's a bald-faced lie. For example, at one point, Floyd pleads with the officers, please, man, don't leave me by myself, man, please, I'm just claustrophobic. And they respond that, not to worry, they won't. But by the way, quote, you're still going in the car. If you're curious, simply check it out for yourself and draw your own conclusions. After all, we've been spoon-fed a great big bunch of whoppers for far too long. Here's how Christina Layla for the Gateway Pundit saw it. Officers were called to the scene after George Floyd allegedly used that counterfeit $20 bill to buy cigarettes at a convenience store, and the body cam footage shows George Floyd wailing in pain, and I would say whining, folks, even before he got out of his own car, before any of the cops touched him. He also kept telling the officers he's claustrophobic, obviously as a way to resist arrest, and he said over and over again, I can't breathe, after the officers put him in the back of the cruiser. Police officers knew he was on drugs, and that's consistent with the autopsy, and Floyd, who had an extensive criminal history, did resist arrest. He resisted as the officers tried to put him in the back of the cruiser, and that was after he had to be ordered a whole bunch of times to get his hands in view and put him on the steering wheel. And the transcripts, as we've already mentioned, were previously released, and on Monday, for the first time, the full body cam footage was released to the public, and the question is whether people will look at it for themselves or believe the crap they're being fed from the leftist propaganda-pushing ministries of truth. And by the way, folks, I checked. Not once does the Daily Mail piece even mention the word drugs with respect to Floyd's arrest and subsequent demise. Ann Coulter put it this way. Thank you, British media. And what we saw was not good for the prosecution. Floyd's wailing in pain before anyone lays a finger on him. Cops know he's on drugs, and Floyd says he can't breathe while he's still standing and breathing. Now, what do you bet, though, that this won't make a darn bit of difference with the continued riots and attempt at a Bolshevik revolution? Because it really never was about George Floyd to begin with. Obviously, he just happened to be the convenient excuse at the right time. Here's another one, and the more you think about it, the more you'll realize why it's a viable candidate for the top of the Big Lies Revealed list today. The FDA has expanded their list of dangerous hand sanitizers to over 100 now. They really care about your health, folks. They urge you to use hand sanitizers and, of course, wear a mask, and then tell you that a whole bunch of these hand sanitizers could even have methanol in them and might be toxic when they're absorbed through the skin. But they don't bother to tell you that rebreathing your own exhaust gases, decreasing your oxygen content in your blood, increasing your CO2, and basically destroying your immune system just might be even more toxic. I've heard the old lie, oh, well, if wearing a mask saves just one person, it's worth it. Well, how about if you use toxic hand sanitizers and it saves just one person? Or how about if not breathing through a toxic, infected mask saves a whole lot of people? It's the hypocrisy, even more than all the outright lies and bogus statistics concerning who's got COVID, who's tested positive for it, real or imagined, and who's died from it. Because we're kind of getting used to those whoppers that ought to really have people wondering. No, wondering isn't a strong enough word. Skeptically disbelieving the crap they're being fed is probably the politest way to put it and the most accurate. Initially, it says the FDA's warnings were focused on products that were potentially toxic because they could be absorbed through the skin and might even include methanol, making them deadly if swallowed as well. But increasingly, a number of products on the list contained insufficient levels of alcohol, thus making them ineffective against the virus and germs, kind of like the masks, if you think about it. Although personally, I'd rather put my hands in something toxic than my nose and mouth. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is oh so concerned about your health. Oh yeah. Even if not a one of Big Brother's three-letter agencies is going to tell you the truth about what's really hurting people. So go on out and get yourself some genetically modified Franken corn and wash it down with some highly acidic aspartame-laced carbonated diet poison. All FDA approved. And they'll even let you take off your mask while you're shoving that down your throat. So let's illustrate that point. A woman in Manhattan Beach, California has been caught on video after throwing a hot cup of coffee in a man's face while he was just trying to sit on a bench and eat his burrito in peace. When he refused to put on his slave muzzle and she demanded, little Karen that she is, that he don one. There's actually a great video up online, it's gone viral, from local TV news Fox 11. Where they interviewed the two men after the fact, one of whom was the coffee-in-the-face recipient, Matthew Roy, who also happened to be wearing a freedom-oriented T-shirt, probably verboten in Manhattan Beach, and his friend James Hernandez, who was also not wearing a mask, but he was wearing a MAGA hat, which is why he also realized he'd better have a body cam on, which caught the whole thing. The anonymous Karen came up as the men were starting to try and enjoy their meal, and like a good little sycophant, demanded they wear their masks. She persisted. The men tried to turn their backs on her and her well-dressed boyfriend and continue their meal. But, says Roy, I guess the guy really wanted to impress his girlfriend because I was pretty dismissive, and I thought when I turned my back on them, they would just move on. But he wanted to stand there and engage me. In other words, giving him what he referred to as a mask lecture. Whereupon the shrieking Jezebel stuck her middle finger in his face, and then tensions escalated further when she threw her coffee in his face. You can hear one of the two men say, "That was dumb," on the video, as Roy decides he's had enough and goes after the couple, trying to get to the sissified boyfriend through his Karen protector. And as I watch the video, folks, I can't help but think that, too, says something about what's happened to our society. It's these women that are going out and attacking people, committing acts of violence, and then not really suffering for it, because men like Matthew Roy and his friend are too polite to give them what they, well, are itching for, it would seem. Let me say it this way, pretty bluntly. Literally every man that I know and have any respect for says, "I would never hit a woman, period." And that was obvious here. And so, I guess, should be the implications, as that patriarchal male attitude is being systematically destroyed. The Ahab of a boyfriend, now with a bloody nose, called police and claimed he'd been assaulted. And here, the police actually seem to have showed up and done the right thing. After a brief investigation, probably including looking at the video, neither Matthew Roy nor the Jezebel and Ahab couple, still unidentified by the time Fox 11 filed their video report, were arrested, because the two men declined to file charges. For a look at where the insanity is headed, and if you haven't heard this story yet, you should, I've seen at least three or four different witnesses on this one. The police state of Melbourne, Australia, and that's no understatement, has now entered phase 4 of the full lockdown for the next 6 weeks. Achtung! First from TGP's coverage. All peons must stay within 5 kilometers, or about 3 miles, of their home. Only one person from each household is allowed to shop at a maximum of once per day. No more than 1 hour of exercise per day. And groups are limited to 2. Other recreational activity is banned, and the curfew runs from 8 p.m. until 5 a.m. Furthermore, people must wear their mask or covering whenever you are allowed to leave the house. Residents of the city are banned from leaving for any reason. Plus, no one can come to Melbourne either, unless it's an emergency. And obviously, no weddings are allowed, and funerals are capped at a maximum of 10 people in attendance. Says the Premier of the state of Victoria, which Melbourne is the capital, Daniel Andrews, told residents, "We can no longer have people simply out and about for no good reason whatsoever." And furthermore, said Paul Joseph Watson's coverage, the new powers also give police the right, that's a strange use of the word though, to enter your home to carry out spot checks even if you don't give them permission, and they don't need no stinking warrant. Controls on buying have been introduced. Citizens are restricted to purchases of no more than two of certain declared essential items, including dairy, meat, vegetables, fish, and, of course, toilet paper. And here's an interesting sidelight. Immediately after the government announced the new draconian measures, police by the hundreds were positioned around various residential tower blocks to prevent any people from escaping. Police told those in the new lockdown that they must stay in the residence in which they slept the previous night for the next 6 weeks, and anyone who violates the order faces a fine of up to $1,652, an amount which is set to be increased. Now, it's possible, folks, you're thinking what I am. This sounds a whole lot like a prison camp. And indeed, there are more than a few similarities. Like this, the Melbourne Fuhrer makes it clear this is not what they call a bonk ban. They had a Q&A that says, "Can I have visitors to my house? Can I see my partner?" "Well, you can't have visitors," says the answer, "or go to another person's house unless it is for the purpose of giving or receiving care. But you can leave and visit if you're in a wink, wink, nudge, nudge, intimate personal relationship. That is, there is no bonk ban," unquote. Why don't they call it what it is, folks? A conjugal visit. Restaurants and cafes, of course, are closed through Phase 4, but liquor stores, kind of like riots, are permitted because they'll at least remain open for pickups. And if some of you are wondering, hey, what about the churches? Is Big Brother still going to allow some of them to be open? Well, from what I saw anyway, interestingly, they don't appear in any of the coverage, kind of like they were never a factor to begin with, which really says a lot about who the 501c3 corporate church actually serves. On then to the People's Totalitarian Republic of now Houston, where the socialist mayor, Sylvester Turner, shown wearing his mask that says, "I can't breathe," appropriately, across his face, has announced that police will begin issuing citations against people not wearing their muzzles, hitting them with a fine of, well, at least at first, $250. "For months," said this wannabe tyrant, "we've been focusing on education and not citations. But now I am instructing the Houston Police Department to issue the necessary warnings and citations to anyone not wearing a mask in public." Now here, folks, is the whopper that really caught your host's attention. He asked the people now being subjugated by the Gestapo there in Houston not to get mad at the police officers. After all, they are only following orders. And he asserted this, quote, "It's all about public health and driving our numbers down."
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. Well, I ain't got a witness, and I can't prove it. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
No, it's not. It's about making blankety-blank and sure that you know who the boss is and that you'll be a good little slave, wear your muzzle, and submit. Let me summarize it this way. They live. As most of you regular listeners know, I've been struggling. Well, maybe that's not the right word. I've certainly been trying to deal with this mask tyranny now for literally months. It's not just unhealthy and absolutely ludicrously bad science. It truly is about nothing more than submission and conditioning people to be good little slaves. The problem is, if you're accosted by one of the idiots in public for not wearing your little slave muzzle, you probably know by now that trying to talk to a Kool-Aid-drinking Karen is, generally speaking, even worse than a waste of time. They could care less about real science. Most of them are petrified. And all they really want to do is virtue signal. Facts don't matter. So truthfully, what you say probably won't make a difference. I do often carry a couple of printed medical articles with me, for the rare few that might actually be able to read. And given that that's the case, let me suggest this. Simply turn away, say, "I'm sorry, I can't hear you," through that muzzle. But all I can hear kind of sounds like, "Bah." Former presidential candidate and U.S. representative from Texas, Dr. Ron Paul, has weighed in on the great big whopping scams that are finally being revealed. Europeans, he says, are waking up to government COVID tyranny. Why, he asks, are Americans still asleep? Hey, I know, folks. Maybe it has to do with all the propaganda Nazis and Dr. Joseph Mengele types who were exported from Germany after the war and brought to the United States to continue their work under Operation Paperclip. Now we're seeing the fruits. Tens of thousands, he begins, of Germans marched through Berlin over the weekend, proclaiming a day of freedom and demanding an end to government-mandated face masks and social distancing. The UK and Netherlands also saw large protests against their government's tyrannical actions in response to the COVID-1984 outbreak. And according to media accounts, the protesters in Berlin held signs reading, "We are being forced to wear a muzzle," which is correct, "natural defense instead of vaccination," hurrah, and "we are making noise because you are stealing our freedom," unquote. And as Dr. Paul says, good for them. Maybe Germans who saw the rise of the Nazis can recognize something now that Americans seem to be blind to. The New York Times tweeted that the masses of Berlin demonstrators were all, quote, "Nazis and conspiracy theorists." Oh, come on. We know that they're liars and the truth is not in them, but give me a break. This gets really old. Ask Dr. Paul, does a paper of record really want us to believe that there were something like a million Nazis active in the streets of Berlin? Let's not kid ourselves, folks. The Nazis are active in the halls of the New York Times and on the streets of Seattle and Portland, not to mention the governor's mansions in a whole bunch of states. The fact is, says Dr. Paul, Europeans are realizing that their government-mandated lockdowns did little or nothing to protect them from the virus while causing economic catastrophe and untold human suffering. They likely looked around and noticed that Sweden, which never locked down its economy, rejected face masks, and kept its restaurants and other places of business open, did not fare any worse than the countries that have been turned into open-air prisons for most of the year. In fact, Sweden had a lower death rate from the virus than strict lockdown states like the UK and France. No wonder people are starting to get angry. But unfortunately, he continues, while the Europeans are waking up, Americans are still asleep as our freedoms continue to be trampled. At this point, folks, I guess I better stop and relate a brief personal anecdote. After over a month or two of talking about it, I finally went out and got a hold of a copy of the 1978 remake of the movie, starring Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams, and Leonard Nimoy, no less, of the sci-fi classic Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And if you've ever seen that movie, you'll recognize why it resonated so strongly with your host. Because its prescience nowadays is beyond denial. For example, you'll know what a pod person looks like when they open their mouth in a great big shriek and point their finger at somebody who's not wearing a mask. But if you haven't seen the movie, take a look. And what you see in your average Walmart or grocery store will probably send chills down your spine. Well, while Dr. Paul doesn't point out the pod person parallels, he does note that while Europeans demand an end to government tyranny, here we see states with minuscule new deaths returning to full lockdown, as if the wannabe tyrants from mayors to governors are finally realizing that their secret dreams of ruling by decree might be thwarted by any return of the concept of God-given rights. Their dreams, he says, are our nightmares. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy put citizens on notice that he will lock the state back down if people dare to go outside without a face diaper or even to have guests inside what they thought were their own homes. What kind of politician, he asks, puts his own constituents on notice? And of course, it's not as if the so-called experts are even looking into treatments for the viral infection or even allowing others who might worry about it to look on their own. Doctors who report their own successful experience treating COVID patients with hydroxychloroquine, for example, are ridiculed, censored, and even fired from their jobs. The rush to silence America's frontline doctors, says Dr. Paul last week, and to disappear their video down the memory hole should terrify anybody who still believes in free speech. No, they say we must keep locked down and masked until we have, say it with me, folks, the vaccine, the great God that will save us all. The U.S. government is dumping billions into a vaccine that may be less than 60% effective, if it works at all, because they're going to be indemnified, remember, folks, to prevent a virus that has something like a 99.8% survival rate. What kind of math is that, he asks. Answer, the kind that's being taught in the government cesspools today, folks. How many more, he asks, are going to be harmed by the vaccine than it helped? Well, he says we may never know because the U.S. government has just granted Big Pharma immunity from all liability claims if the vaccine produces, and it will, damaging side effects. They keep moving the goalposts to keep us terrified and isolated. First it was body counts, he says, and then cases. The numbers have been so wildly off that it's hard to trust anything that's being reported. And finally, people are getting angry. They're confused. They're facing an economic depression of literally historic proportions, far, by the way, in excess of anything the Great Depression had to offer, folks. And worst of all, concludes Dr. Ron Paul, they're watching as the Leviathan government snatches every last bit of their freedoms. Three cheers for the Europeans, he concludes, and let's hope Americans wake up soon. Well, folks, if you saw Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you may have another perspective on that. And if that's not bad enough, the Federal Reserve is looking to put a final wooden stake in the economy to boot. A top Federal Reserve official said on Sunday that the U.S. government should again impose strict coronavirus-related lockdowns for a month or longer across the entire United States in order to make sure that the economy never recovers. Well, that's not what he says. Are you ready for this? In order to boost the economy, says Neil Kashkari, president of the Minneapolis, where else, Federal Reserve Bank. I guess, folks, it's kind of like if you have a sick pet. You feed it some poison to see if it won't boost the recovery. What kind of idiots put people like this in positions of power? Yeah, I know, those who ignore their oaths of office because positions like this shouldn't even exist if we still had a constitution. And here's the idiocy this guy is spouting. Quote, I mean, if we were to lock down really hard, I know I hate to even suggest it. Oh, yeah, sure, folks. People will be frustrated by it. But if we were to lock down hard for a month or 6 weeks, we could get the case count down so that our testing and our contact tracing was actually enough to control it the way that that's happening in the Northeast right now. Oh, yeah, we should all look to New York City as an example, said the evil Kashkari. They had a rocky start, but they're doing a pretty good job right now.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
At least a tiny percent of investors are waking up and refusing to drink the Kool-Aid, and we're seeing that reflect in higher prices for the real stuff, gold and silver. Said one of a number of pieces documenting the rise from Zero Hedge. Paper silver prices were up 25% in July, and that's the second biggest monthly gain on record. They extended those dramatic gains this week, while gold continues its historic rise too, now well above $2,050 for a fiat ounce. When all was said and done, after at least a brief attempt to sell off on Friday, the paper precious metal still closed at new recent or even record highs. But remember, whatever the COMEX price that's quoted, actually getting the real stuff in your hand is going to cost at least $4 or $5 an ounce more than whatever the paper pushers are trying to tell you. Said former director of the U.S. Mint, Ed Moy, to MarketWatch, what's driving gold prices now are mainly the fear of inflation, gee, do you think, due to the magnitude of the monetary and fiscal stimulus worldwide, i.e. printing money like there's no tomorrow, and of course the flight to safety due to the uncertainty around how and when the global economy will recover. Unquote, and he left out if. Let me close the show again with this reminder. If you'd like to be able to trade for things you might need, given what's coming, holding on to lawful U.S. coin, like pre-1964 dimes and quarters, probably beats the heck out of bits representing worthless paper. Call it a word to the wise, and those who can already see things that are portents of what's to come, like the fact that in a lot of places, you're already not being allowed to buy or sell without showing by your muzzle that you're a good little slave of the almighty state. Put it this way, if you'd like. Big Brother wants you to wear the mask of the beast. And after the mandatory vaccines, it's increasingly easy to draw a roadmap of what follows. Towards the end of the week, the much-persecuted former Trump administration official, General Michael Flynn, wrote an open letter that he called, "This is my letter to America." And he said a number of things that really ought to resonate with those who have been paying attention and know what's going on. Quote, "We're witnessing a vicious assault by enemies of all that is good, and our president is having to act in ways unprecedented in decades, maybe centuries. The biblical nature of good versus evil cannot be discounted as we examine what is happening on the streets of America. It's Marxism," he continued, "in the forms of Antifa and Black Lives Matter, versus our own very capable and very underappreciated law enforcement professionals." And he goes on to say, "When the destiny of the United States is at stake, and it is, the very future of the entire world is threatened." After he notes, as the founders did, that Providence is the ultimate judge of our destiny, and in order to achieve our destiny as a freedom-loving nation, Providence compels us to do our part in our communities. He then has this advice. "We can no longer pretend that these dark forces are even going to go away by mere prayer alone. Prayers matter, but action is required. Let's not be intimidated or fear those who cry out that we're in the minority. We are not." And when it comes to action on all these various fronts that he mentions, economic, media, clerical, and ecclesiastical realms, here's his single paragraph summary. "Decide how you can act within your abilities. Stand up and state your beliefs. Be proud of who you are and what you stand for. And face, head on, those community so-called leaders who are willing to allow dark forces to go beyond peaceful protests and destroy and violate your safety and security." And he concludes by returning to this idea of a struggle between good and evil, saying, evil will succeed for a time when good people are divided from each other and their personal lives, children from those who teach them, preachers from their congregations, customers from local businesses, and so on, suggesting that America should not, and as he puts it, will never give in to evil because Americans work together to solve problems. We do not and should not ever allow anarchy and the evil forces behind it to operate on any street in our nation. Because, as he puts it, we are one nation under God, and it's our individual liberties, I like the term God-given rights, folks, that make us strong, not liberties given by our government. Government has no liberty unless and until we the people say so. God bless America, he says finally, and let's stand by everything that was and is good in our lives, in our communities, and in our country. Otherwise, America as the true North Star for humanity will cease to exist as we know it. Is it already too late, or will America wake up?